Chapter 4. What Matters Most. "How do you do that?" the vampire asked. The last silver saint was staring at the chemical globe, that pale moth battering ceaselessly upon the glass. The thirst was a constant presence, spreading black wings about his shoulders and running burning hands down his throat, chest, belly. The wind was howling about the keep outside, and Gabriel could feel the chill, real and remembered, echoing in the abandoned chambers of Cairnheim, the hollow halls of his heart. But he glanced up as the vampire spoke, annoyed. "How do I do what?" Jean-Francois waved his quill.
"That thing you do with your eyebrows."
"The fuck are you talking about?"
"You're doing it again," the historian said. "It's not quite a frown. More like a frown had a drunken ménage à trois with a glower and a pout. It's very good. You must have practiced it at length in the mirror."
"Benefits of having a reflection, you soulless prick." The historian chuckled as the silver saint met his eyes. "So that's it?" Gabriel demanded. "I tell you the secret history of your species, and you dribble nonsense about eyebrows. Does it not concern you that..."
"You presume much, Silver Saint?"
Jean-Francois had returned to sketching, his ruby lips pursed.
"I suppose you cannot be blamed. You were raised by a parcel of ignorant half-breeds, after all. Folly your bread and deceit your wine. But the Asani were not the only kith to fight in the wars of the blood. And while mortals may have expunged all mention of the faithless from the annals of antiquity, the Knights of the Blood remember."
Gabriel's eyes narrowed, a slow smile spreading across his lips. "Margot told you. Interesting."
"Not particularly,"
the Marquis yawned.
"I am her favourite, after all."
"She had other favourites in her time, may I hear it? Your Empress of Wolves and Men. Those Knights of the Blood shared more than a battlefield, if rumour is true." Gabriel leaned forward, trying to catch Jean-Francois' eye. "Did she grieve Fabienne when he died, I wonder? I heard they hated each other in the end, but you never forget your first true love."
"Please," the Marquis sighed. "You embarrass yourself, de Lyon. We are not here to discuss the exploit of Madame's youth, nor the lovers she has outlived. Your mortal mind cannot contain the smallest drop of the ocean that is she."
The quill's golden nib sank into the pot of ink, and Jean-Francois met the silver saint's eyes.
"So, Voss's hounds had run you to ground. Four of you to defend a castle against an army. You lived, that much is obvious."
Chocolate eyes roamed Gabriel, boots to brow.
"The question is how?"
"No." The last silver saint steepled tattooed fingers at his chin, dragging his thoughts back to the night it all began to fall apart. "The question is what I paid for it." Gabriel shook his head and breathed deep. Cairnheim's best point of defence was its bridge, a narrow passage where whatever numbers the terrors had would count for less. If Genoa had built himself a damned drawbridge over that chasm instead, his home might have been impregnable. But I supposed an ancien so powerful in a lair so remote had little fear of unwelcome guests.
"Age breeding arrogance," Jean-Francois murmured.
Gabriel glanced at the fortress around them. "Wonder who that reminds me of."
"Ah, sarcasm, the whelp's excuse for wit."
The last silver saint smiled thinly, toying with the stem of his goblet. "Still, even without a drawbridge, Selene, Phoebe and I might hold past that narrow. So while the sun sank ever closer to the horizon, and Dior snatched some much-needed sleep, my sister and I tore down the statues lining the bridge, piled furniture from the chateau around them, creating 5 choke points. I draped the barricades with tapestries from the halls, sheets from the boudoirs, and, glad Dior wasn't around to see it,
every stitch of clothing from Genoa's wardrobes. The gibbets dangling below the bridge were rusted and useless, but we used every spear and sword from the armory, jammed in among the furniture and statues, a bristling thicket of blades pointed at our foes. Alba and Elaine would smash through them like glass, but we might slow down thrall swords or wretched. And, for the final touch, we doused the lot in liquor we found in the chateau's cellar. It was Talhosti vodka for the most part. That shit will strip the varnish off floorboards if you let it sit too long, so I knew it had burned hot. And if there's one thing all vampires fear, it's fire. The bottles were blue, a touch of cobalt in the glass, I supposed. But as I finished dousing the fourth barricade, I saw Selene upending a bottle of dusty green onto our last line of defence. "The fuck are you doing?" I cried. "Preparing our... Are you insane?" I snatched the bottle away, looking over the lamb and wolf on the label. "This is Chateau Montfort. One bottle is worth an emperor's ransom these nights." "Do we know any captive emperors? It is liquor, Gabriel. What matter?" "This isn't liquor. It's gold." I looked the bottle over, relieved to find it mostly full. "There's not enough alcohol in red wine to burn anyway. You're just wasting it." "And guzzling it like a hog at trough is perfectly acceptable usage." "Now there's a thought." I lifted the bottle in toast and took a long swallow. "Santé, sister. Your blood's worth smoking." We stood at the top of the stairs when we were done, those great bronze doors looming at our backs. Selene had raided Genoa's wardrobe before we consigned the rest to the barricades, and her new greatcoat was the rich red of heart's blood, velvet brocade brushing the cobbles at our feet. I surveyed our makeshift defences, drinking slowly from the Montfort, savouring the rich, heavenly taste of the first wine I'd drunk in years. The bridge to Cairnheim stretched out before us, a narrow gauntlet, reeking of spirits and gleaming with spears. We'd surely make our foes bleed for every inch. But God only knew the strength coming at us, save that two among them were princes of forever. "It is not much," Selene sighed, "but Fortuna willing, it will be enough."
"We'll need more than an angel's blessing to see us through this storm, sister."
Selene brushed her hair from her mask, her embroidered sleeve slipping back from her wrist.
"What other strength would you ask for, brother?"
The air grew still between us, my eyes narrowed. I could see thin blue veins beneath the marble of her skin, remember the taste of her blood crashing upon my tongue as she forced me to drink at Saint Michon. That blood had given me a strength I'd never known, and God knew I'd need strength if Dior was to live through this. But two more drops over two more nights, I'd be Selene's thrall, and I'd as much desire to deepen the bond between my sister and I as I had to cut my own fucking throat. But a deeper fear in me was whispering, and never quite silenced now. A tiny ember burning in my chest, bursting slow to vicious flame these last few months. I'd confided it to none, but smelling Lachlan's blood, Dior's blood, Phoebe's blood, I had to admit the thirst in me was worsening, growing more difficult to drown, no matter how much I smoked or drank. A word was echoing in my memory, a dread taught to every acolyte in Saint Michon. The name of the madness that eventually consumed every pale blood alive.
"Sangire," Selene whispered. "The red thirst."
"I warned you to stay out of my head," I growled.
"We would love nothing more."
Selene plucked her cuff down over her wrist.
"But your thoughts bleed, Gabriel, the same way your beloved Astrid bled every night onto your fool's tongue. We can feel the price you now pay for it."
Anger flared at the mention of my bride's name, bitter and broken bottle sharp.
"Spare me the preaching, Selene. and mind your own fucking business.
This is our business. The Grail is our only hope of salvation. We must do all we can to protect her from her enemies without and within.
My eyes narrowed at that. What do you mean, within?
God Almighty, she sighed, rounding on me. Do you not see? You are a danger to Dio, Gabriel.
We all know it. Stumbling drunkenness aside, it is only a matter of time before the bloody madness budding in you comes to bloom. We know you care for the girl. We know why. But when this night's butchery is done, you would do well to leave her to the only one who can truly protect her.
I squared up to Selene then, hissing through clenched teeth. Hear me now. If the legions of heaven stood between me and that girl, I would slay every angel in the host to get back to her side. She and I have walked through hell together. I will never leave her. You hear me? And I would never hurt her.
Not tonight. Perhaps not tomorrow. But we see your thirst growing every day. How long until it consumes you? Utterly. And the ones you claim to care for.
Selene tilted her head, hissing behind that hateful mask.
Did they not warn you? Your precious silver order. What would happen if you indulged your desires night after night? Or were you simply too drunk with lust of the flesh to give a damn about your immortal soul?
You dare lecture me about souls, when you're part of a cult that consumes them.
You have no idea what we are part of. Communion is a holy task given unto...
Holy? I crowed, incredulous. I saw the look in your eyes when you drank Rickard Divok to ashes, and there was nothing holy about it. This is about hunger, Selene, and power. And deeds so dark a monster like Fabian fucking Voss convinced a legion of hate-filled leeches to work together to wipe it from the earth.
You know nothing. Nothing of what I have seen. Nothing of...
I know after tonight, you and I are done. Damn your fables. Damn your masters. You promised answers and delivered ashes. And I'll not play the fool for you twice over. We win through the hell that's coming for us tonight. I'm taking Dior to the Highlands tomorrow.
There are no answers for you in the Highlands, only death. Dior must go to Dun Mergen. Mother Marin awaits her there in eventide and we can...
The hell is eventide. I held up a hand as she began to answer. On second thought, spare me. I won't be able to hear you over the deafening roar of the fucks I don't give.
You cannot do this, brother.
You can't stop me, sister. Dio listens to my counsel, not yours. Remember?
Selene's eyes narrowed as the winds of our homeland clawed the gulf between us. I stood a head taller, glowering down at her, just as unyielding as she. If we were both our mama's children in that moment, stubborn, prideful, the blood of lions roaring in our veins. I recalled Selene as she'd been, my hellion, my baby sister, but she was only a shadow of herself now. And though in parts the fault of that was mine, I knew I'd been an idiot to trust her. Perhaps it had been guilt that drove me to the spires of Cairnheim. Perhaps it was her blood lingering in my veins, or the desperate hope my actions at Saint Michel hadn't doomed the world. But I saw this all now for the folly it had been.
You're right, Selene. I don't know what you've seen nor done. But I've spent my whole life hunting monsters, and I know one when I see one. And I see one in you.
And spinning on my silvered heel, I strode into the keep. I cursed as I slammed the mighty doors behind me. I knew damn well it was foolish to push my sister,
that I'd need her strength tonight if any of us were to make it out alive. But the thirst in me was roiling, pounding like a fucking hammer on my skull as I pictured that faint blue scrawl upon her wrist. That fear was growing, that word echoing now in my head as I took another long gulp of wine to drown it. I remembered the red rites I'd seen in Saint-Michel as a boy. Those silver saints who gave up their lives before they succumbed to the madness in our blood. Better to die a man than live a monster, they used to tell us. And though I'd levelled the charge at Selene, I could feel that same monster now in me.
Why did you do it? Jean-Francois asked.
Do what? Gabriel replied.
You had been cautioned by the Order. You knew the insanity that all pale blood succumbed to, and that indulging your thirst would only hasten its onset.
The historian's dark eyes fixed upon the Silver Saint's wine-stained lips.
So, why drink from your wife night after night, de Lyon? Your famille's blood runs hot, oui? But are you such a slave to passion?
Gabriel drank down the last of his goblet, staring down at the monster opposite. All the light in the room seemed to coalesce in the dark pools of its eyes, shining like stars. His skin prickled as he thought back on those long, slow nights of blood and fire and sin. Smooth curves beneath his roaming hands, thumping pulse beneath his flickering tongue. He sat forward, elbows to knees, beckoning Jean-Francois with one finger. The vampire stared a long and breathless moment, silence thick in the air, finally leaning close. Gabriel smoothed back a golden curl from the monster's ear as he whispered,
"Because she always said please."
The vampire turned his head, meeting the Silver Saint's eyes.
"I shall remember that."
"So," Gabriel continued, leaning back, "we had perhaps 4 hours to dusk. I knew I should rest, but a tempest was ringing my skull as I stood in Genoa's foyer. Dior had drawn back the faded draperies from that massive hearth, lit a tiny fire in its vast hollow. Bear and Pony were tethered and slumbering near the stairs close by, safe out of the weather. Dior herself lay on a chaise longue near the flames, Phoebe curled up beside her, both sleeping. And content the dusk dancer would keep the girl safe, I trudged up the arc of the eastern stair with my wine in hand, searching for some measure of salvation. It's a strange thing, that silence before the storm. I've stood on the eve of 100 battles, cold blood. I've seen every way a person deals with that fear. Some drink and carouse, desperate to wring one last drop out of life before they dance with death. Some seek solace in another's arms, a moment of living in those warm, soft places where nothing else matters. Nearly everyone prays. People say the test of a man's mettle is on the battlefield, but that's not the truth. You want to know a man. Look into his eyes the night before the shouting and screams drown out the voice inside his head, before he gets drunk enough to think himself brave, when it's just him, and the things he's done, and the things he might never do. That's when you'll see us as we truly are. I let my feet lead me, and rather than taking me to the chapel, I found myself in Genoa's chess room. It was a vast space, lit by dim day's death light, stained glass, checkered floor. Like all other statuary in Kernheim, the pieces had been carved by a master's hand. The bright were opalite, the dark black opal, the tallest among them near my height. A game had apparently been underway when Genoa decided to end himself, now never to be finished. Wandering among the figures, pondering the battle to come, I found my lips twisting as I noted the light side was running the Russo gambit.
Rousseau? Jean-Francois asked.
Gabriel blinked. You don't know chess?
Not yet, the vampire smiled. I was planning to master it in a century or so.
It's a feigned technique. Feign weakness to draw your opponent out of position in his haste to finish you. Then you strike, high risk,
High reward. Looking around, I could see the bright player had been using it to claw back control of a losing game. I circled the Dark Emperor, watching rainbow veins glitter in his stone. The storm outside put me in mind of the tempests we used to get on the coast back home, a lighthouse burning now in my smoke and wine-addled mind. Pushing my knuckles into my eyes, I fancied I heard small footsteps behind me, running feet and laughter, turning to glimpse a child, a little girl, long black hair and bloodless skin, flitting among the pieces. I heard her calling for me. "Papa! Papa!" My wife's song in the kitchen rising over the howl of the wind and those three awful knocks that brought it all to an end. Thump, thump, thump.
"There you are," came a voice.
I looked up to find Dior standing at the entrance, and at the sight of her, my heart grew warm again, those ghosts at my back falling blessedly silent. But looking closer, blinking hard, my smile faded like their voices on the storm. She was still dressed in Genoa's stolen frock coat, but she wore a long shirt of chainmail underneath now. She'd given her silver steel long blade to Lachlan when we parted, but she'd replaced it with a sword from the armory. The blade was too big for her, hanging at her belt in an ornate scabbard that dragged along the floor as she marched into the room. She carried a helm under one arm, plate gauntlets encasing her hands, heavy greaves on her shins. Some sleep had done her a world of good, but she still looked pale. Pale and frightened, and very, very young. "What are you all dollied up for?"
"What do you think?"
she said, clanking to a halt in front of me. "I think your other waistcoat suited you better. What happened to all those fucks you gave for fashion?"
"Fashion can wait, Gabriel. The terrors are coming."
"Oui," I nodded. "But a chain shirt won't help much against monsters you can punch through plate mail. Armour is heavy, noisy, slow, even when it's made to fit you. And that lot fits you about as well as a nun's skirts would fit me."
"What the hell else am I supposed to fight in, then?"
"Who says you're fighting at all?"
"Me, I say."
I breathed a weary sigh, tired in my bones. "Dior, you can barely hold that sword, let alone swing it. You're not sporting with the puppies anymore, you're running with the wolves. Cutting down a lone wretched is one thing, but fighting toe-to-toe with Ancien is another battle entire. When hell starts raining down on that bridge tonight, you're going to be nowhere near it. And if hell makes it through the door, you don't stand your ground. You run. Agreed?" She breathed deep, scowling.
"You know, I hate it when you do that."
"Do what?"
"Tell me what I'm doing and then put a question mark at the end as if you're asking."
"Perhaps I should leave the question mark off in future and see if you actually do what you're fucking told."
"Fat fucking chance."
"Thought fucking not." The girl clenched her armoured fists, glancing at the stone pieces around us.
"Selene told me about the argument you had."
Hackles rippled down my spine, the memory of my sister's words on the bridge hanging in the air. I could almost hear that viper's hiss at my back.
"You are a danger to Dior."
"It's unwise to be talking to her alone, Dior. Selene's a fanatic, a mad woman."
"This Mother Marin she talked about is supposed to be the brood child of Ilya herself, the oldest Asani still on Earth. The answers we need are bound to be in Donmer again, but Selene said you want to take me to the Highlands instead?"
I took a long pull from my wine. "That's right," Dior glowered.
"Did you ever think to ask what I wanted?"
"Dior, it's not what you want that matters now. It's what you need. Nobody doubts your spirit, but you've no inkling of the monstrous fucking evil breathing but an inch from your neck. And the fact you want to risk that neck in battle tonight only proves it." I sighed, shaking my head as I gazed to the stained glass above. "And how could you know? You've never seen it. You're a child, for fuck's sake."
"Oh, merci," she spat. "Papa."
We stood in silence, scowling and stubborn, and it occurred to me how ill-suited I was for all this. Patience had only been 11 years old when she was taken from me. Dior had raised herself from the time she was my daughter's age, and God only knew the things she'd done and had done to her in kind. She loathed being told what to do, and yet she desperately needed to be. But who the fuck was I to tell her anything at all? She was right. I wasn't her father. Sometimes I barely managed to be her friend. Dior had turned away from me, scowling, wandering among the chess pieces to search for calm. I took a gulp of wine, waved at the board with my bottle. "You want to play?" She glanced over her shoulder, ice blue eyes dark with danger.
"I don't know how."
"You want to play for money, then?" She chuckled despite herself, hanging her head to hide her smile in the tumble of her hair. I laughed aloud to see that smile, and at the sound, Dior laughed too, her eyes sparkling. The tension between us melted a little, like dew on a springtime morn.
"You're drunk,"
she said, only half scolding.
"I'm merry." I motioned to the other side of the board. "Over there, I'll school you."
"I'd rather you school me in Northwind's dance again, truth told."
"This game is older than Empire. There's lessons in it well worth learning."
Dior pouted, skeptical, but relented nonetheless, clanking over to stand behind the bright army. She withdrew a black cigarelle from her case as I waved toward her new suit.
"You'll just wear yourself out walking around in all that metal."
She scowled and lit her smoke, ignoring me.
Shaking my head, I pulled the last swallow from my Montfort, patting the dark piece in front of me on the shoulder.
He stood, tall as I, clad in plate mail, a longsword in his hands, and a crowned helm upon his head.
"This is the Emperor," I declared, "the most important piece on the board. He can attack any direction he pleases, but he can't move far. So he tends to stand here, at the back of the line, commanding the rest of these pieces to do his will."
"Sounds like a boy I knew from Le Chame."
The girl breathed smoke into the air, scowling.
"One of the Narrowman's crew. We used to call him Blister."
"Blister?" I lifted one brow. "Why?"
"He only ever showed up after the hard work was done."
"There are privileges to wearing the crown,"
Dior scoffed.
"I wouldn't know."
"Perhaps these little bastards will be more familiar to one of your colourful upbringing then."
I nudged a smaller piece with my boot. A row of them, waist height, fashioned like infantry in archaic armour.
"The peon. They're the front line of your army. Cheap, expendable. They open the board up for the rest of your pieces to really play.
This here is Chateau. This one is Chevalier. And this is Pontifex. Church and state. They move in different ways, but their task is the same. Go out onto the battlefield and inflict carnage in their emperor's name. They're your specialist pieces. You protect them if you can. But in the end, you can lose them all and still win the game."
I demonstrated the method of moving each piece, lifting them easily with the dark strength in my veins. It occurred to me this was a set that only cold bloods were truly meant to play with, that Dior would struggle to move them by herself. But still, she watched on now, blue eyes shining as she dragged on her smoke, her natural curiosity blossoming.
"What about that one?"
she asked, breathing grey.
"This is the Empress."
I patted the piece she nodded to.
"The power behind your throne.
She moves as far as she pleases, in any direction she likes. She's your executioner, your red right hand, swift, versatile, deadly." Dior smiled.
"I like her."
"Don't get too attached. In the end, she's just as expendable as the rest."
The girl frowned.
"Why? She sounds the strongest piece on the board."
"She's not."
I tapped the Dark Emperor's shoulder again. "He is. The object of the game is to capture your opponent's emperor. In the end, nothing else matters."
"That's foolish. He can't do half of what these other pieces do.
He does what none of them can do. He wins you the game.
That's not fair.
Fair is for dead men and losers, Dior.
But it makes no sense,
she scowled, breathing grey from her nostrils.
How can the coward who doesn't fight be the difference between winning and losing?
The Emperor does fight, if he's forced to. And when he does, like any good leader, he can swing battle's tide. But you don't risk your most valuable piece on the front line. Not when all these other pieces are willing to fight for him. Not when losing him means losing the game. That's not just foolish. That's suicide.
Dior folded her arms and stared across the board. I'm beginning to see why you wanted to teach me this game.
Oui?
Your metaphor is showing, Chevalier de Lyon.
Why, Emperor Lechance, whatever do you mean?
I'm not a piece on a board, and my life isn't a game.
You're right, it's not. And yet you continue to treat it like one.
She dragged on her cigarette, breathing fire. Another lecture, just what I needed.
You do need it, I scowled. You're a 17-year-old girl.
And is it the fact I'm 17, or that I'm a girl that brings out the bitch in you?
Don't give me that shit. I've never treated you less for what's between you.
I don't need you to fight my wars for me, she snapped. You were younger than I am when you won the Battle of the Twins, when you ended Lord Voss, and I killed the Prince of Forever too, in case you missed it, and saved your sorry ass in the process.
Dior, listen to me. You are the most important person in this empire. The scion of Saint-Michel, the end to Day's death, the hope of the realm. Without you, all is lost. I lowered my voice, knowing I was stepping onto thin ice. I know you still feel guilty about Chloe's ritual. I know a part of you wonders if perhaps all this might have ended if she'd but ended you. And so you put yourself at risk, time and time again, ignoring me on the mare, ignoring me at Avalaine, ignoring me now.
Enough people have died on my account already, she shouted. Aaron, Baptiste, Rafa, Sisha, Bell. I'm not just going to sit by while you give your life for me too, Gabriel.
I know you won't, and that's my point. He doesn't matter.
With unholy strength, I hurled the Chevalier across the room, Dior flinching as it shattered against the wall.
These don't matter.
One by one, I lifted the beautiful pieces, dark and bright, Pian and Chateau and Empress, smashing and hurling them aside.
None, none, none of them!
Until only two pieces remained. And chest heaving, I lifted the Dark Emperor over my head and with a roar brought it down at the Bright Emperor's feet with all my strength. The flagstones shattered like glass. A hollow boom echoed among the gables. The Dark Emperor broke into a dozen pieces, dust and fragments spilling across the smashed tiles. The room was deathly silent as I turned to Dior, chest heaving, fangs bared. And in that quiet, again I heard the sound of little feet and laughter. My wife's lonely song on the ocean winds.
Victory, I hissed, over the darkness, over him. That's what matters, Dior.
She held my stare a moment, then looked to the floor. The once beautiful pieces were scattered, fallen on their sides, splintered and broken. The girl shook her head, pale blue gaze drifting over the bright emperor, standing alone on the ruined and broken field. Gabriel, if this is victory, what the hell does defeat look like?
God damn you, girl.
Taking one last drag on her cigarette, she dropped it onto the tile, crushing it under her boot. You're drinking too much. I'm really worried about you. And turning on her heel, she clanked out the door.